Okay, good. Well, then, so the first thing that we will do, we recorded attendance and guests, call the meeting to order. We need to have a motion and a vote on approving the agenda. So, can I get a motion and a second to approve the agenda?
I motion to approve the agenda. This is Kennedy.
Kennedy.
I
okay.
second. That's Denise.
Denise. Okay, great. I guess I need to, let's see, who I'm gonna have to write these down. So Kennedy, you say I or nay.
Jeremiah is doing minutes, Ken, as
Oh, but
well.
I just wouldn't know who I need. I'm writing down who to ask in what order, right?
Oh, okay, so.
Kennedy,
Aye.
Denise,
I.
Janina. Janina, is she there?
She was having trouble with her mute. Let me see if I can fix that.
Well, let's go to Zena.
Hi.
Ken, any other directors that I'm missing that I overlooked here? We have Gretchen, right? So Gretchen.
Hi.
This is Janina. Are you able to hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I apologize. Hi.
All right, great. Okay, the agenda is approved. So first, we're gonna invite anyone who'd like to make a presentation from the floor first on non-agenda items. Is there anyone that would like to make a presentation on an item not on the agenda? Okay, hearing none. Is there anyone that would like to make a presentation for an item that is on the agenda? Right, hearing none, we'll proceed to Roman numeral three, reports and presentations. First, the leadership updates. Give that back to you.
Thank you. So I'm giving some of our time to an opener just to give everyone a chance to connect with someone else. And what I'm going to ask you guys to do is think about one of your most challenging professional times in your career. And we're going to pair share for 5 minutes and group share for 3 minutes as a whole. And if you could talk about what you learned from the experience. How you've changed as a result, how it's supported your growth as a leader. So, with that, are there any questions before I put everyone into two-person breakout rooms? Please make sure to introduce yourself with each other and your roles, and we'll go from there. I'm sorry, my love, period. I will get you a tutor, period. This is the first time you are saying this. Okay, period. We can discuss, period. Take a deep breath, comma, do your best, comma, maybe go to swim if it makes you feel better, period. I'm in a board meeting, comma, do what you need to do, period. Daddy will be home soon. Hey.
Hey, Farnas.
How you doing?
Good. We're supposed to come back, right?
No, usually people wait until the time.
Oh,
is,
okay.
They'll all come back in 11 seconds, so we're good.
Okay, perfect.
Can I ask two or three people to share back what they discussed in their small groups? Anyone who wants to volunteer?
I'll volunteer. We both landed on the lessons that we learned, the challenges that we overcame were all about ignoring people, getting enamored with this business solution and not the people, and also believing in ourselves. So that's what we came up with.
Thank you, Ken. Anybody else want to share?
I'll just add that I think Dorothy and I had similar stories with the same sort of lessons.
I asked everyone to do this because I recently went to a CCSA meeting and there were about 40 charter school leaders there, and they all again and again repeated, 30 years in the business, this has been the hardest time of my entire career. I've never thought I'd be a health leader, public health doctor, all of these things that I've had to learn and take on, and I've had to take it all on this year in the midst of this chaos. And I think we're all feeling it. And so as we jump into this presentation, I wanted us to call on the wisdom of years past and challenges past, and hope that both to bring the empathy of what this experience is feeling like for us as school leaders in this moment, but also to remember that time together. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and share my screen again and share the presentation. So you've seen this slide before. Last year, we were really responsive to the needs at the time in distance learning. We did more meals than ever. We distributed laptops, more internet supports, emergency funding for families, mental health supports. And the moment at this time is calling for a whole other type of intervention. And you all receive my regular updates about this data dashboard. So this isn't surprising or new to anyone, but I've been sharing it with everyone every week. We're tracking all of this data regularly to try to get all of our students tested regularly, to ensure that we're collecting more vaccination proof from our staff. We're gradually beginning to collect vaccination proof from our students. And it's a lot of information that we're tracking, along with all the quarantines and the independent studies and the additional supports for students who have to go out. But the good news is, when you look at this, that we have only had two on-campus, campus-based transmissions since March 2020. So that means that people have come and been tested positive, but because we've been wearing masks, because we've been keeping our spaces clean, maintaining the distance that we need to keep, for the most part, transmission has not happened on our campuses. And when we look at those two, it was staff members who ate together who tested positive after engaging with each other. It was not from student interactions. So all the work is leading to a positive end. We've created a crazy amount of systems and structures that were never in place before. We created this amazing parent guide with lots of resources based on a lot of local school systems. We created this COVID protocol and communication toolkit that has a communication and action items linked to every possible scenario that we might face. And every time the policies and the systems and the structures change, we're shifting the communications and adapting it. And then we're sending out resources regularly. And you guys see all of this on a regular basis. But all of this led us to the path of clarity that we needed additional leadership and support. And so with that, I'm so extremely excited to introduce you all to Jennifer Fenton, who has stepped into the role of Director of Health and Safety at ECS. And I'm going to hand off to Jen to introduce herself.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much. While I am new to the ECS team, I can say with all certainty that I am in love. From the students to the staff to your site leaders to the physical sites themselves, your mission, your goals, what you are doing in the communities that you serve, it absolutely has my whole heart. And I am so honored to be the Director of Health and Safety. Now, a little bit about myself. While I do not come from the public health world, I am a lawyer by trade. I have been living, breathing, sleeping, eating, all things COVID for the last 18 months. I am president of the Board of Trustees at the Manhattan Beach Unified School District, where I am intricately involved with everything that has gone on since the pandemic hit. I was in the superintendent's office the night we decided to close our schools. I helped draft those communications. I was sitting with our assistant director of student services, wondering what this Zoom distance learning meant for our students and for our staff, and how teachers were going to start on Monday delivering lesson plans with 24-hour notice, right? And something totally different than what we've been doing in the past. I worked with our CBO on maintenance and operations, looking at our facilities, determining how we were going to handle cleaning of the surfaces, what we were going to do with our maintenance staff, how we were going to address social and emotional issues that were caused by school closures. And then operationally, you know, looking at the budget, did we have enough money to buy the plexiglass? What did it mean for the COVID relief? How are we going to pay for subs? Could we even get subs? So it's all of that, including advocating on a state level where I was really involved in pushing to ensure that educational staff, not just teachers, but those who were on the grounds were provided opportunities to be vaccinated in order to keep them safe. So I was really one of those leaders pushing at the beginning when they first started distributing vaccines to ensure that they had the opportunity to get those shots. Prior to my board involvement, I actually ran several large campaigns in Manhattan Beach. In 2016, we passed two bonds for facilities updates and upgrades, and that raised over $153 million. And in 2018, I ran a parcel tax campaign, which requires two-thirds vote for all voters in Manhattan Beach. And it taxes parcels $225 per year for 6 years. So that kind of brings me to the development background, where I was the associate director of development for an organization called the Disability Rights Legal Center. And they provide education outreach, and they also advocate for the legal rights of individuals with disabilities. And I did their grant writing, fundraising, program development. And prior to that, I was education and outreach coordinator for a sister organization called Cancer Legal Resource Center, where I went around the state and the nation, and I spoke to oncologists and social workers and patient navigators and patients themselves. And I explained the legal ramifications of cancer and how various laws could help them during their process. So education has been in my background. I am public interest girl by heart, and I am just so pleased to be here. So thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Jen. It's been amazing to have her here this past month. She's really hit the ground running. And I was saying that it feels like a 15-pound weight has been lifted off of my shoulders, which is a gift. And I think a lot of people throughout the organization are feeling that way. We also have promoted Cesar Delgado, who is who's a counselor at ECMS Gardena. He's still serving in that role while we seek his replacement, to be the social work specialist. He has a degree in social work and has been working in that field and has got a lot of ideas and a vision for how to strengthen our social work program, which we have not had in the past. We're actually partnering with Lawndale Elementary School District to learn their best practices. And he has a partner there who he's already starting to talk to. And he has three social workers who will be reporting to him at three longer term sites. And at ECHS Gardena, he will be taking the lead there. One of the things we're gonna be talking about is a vaccine mandate. I just wanted to give you a preview of this. You know that it's all over the news. Lots of districts locally have considered or implemented vaccine mandates. And some districts are having incredible luck even without a mandate, or are not considering one at this time because they have such high rates of vaccination, both amongst their students and their staff. And so this is something that we wanted to get your insights on. It's not something we're making a decision about this evening. We wanted to have a conversation about it. And in light of all of this about health and public health and safety and management, it's like, what's going on with our priorities? And as you may remember, we've really tried to hone in on one or two priorities per year that we focus on, that we believe are our wildly important goals, the things that if we change will have the most significant impact on our students. And our priorities that we identified this year were to strengthen ECS's advisory program to reinforce the tenet, every child is a blessing. For those of you who were here with Drs. Kenjis Watson and Tiffany Marie for the roots and soil sessions, you'll remember that that's one of the tenets of Black wellness that we're trying to reinforce in our advisory program. And we're also trying to implement new best practices that will leverage instructional growth for our students based on what we've learned. We've been in this crazy scenario, and we've learned a lot of things from it, and some things have gotten better. How do we take what we've learned from distance learning from this last year to continue to grow? And with that, I'm going to hand off to Beth to share some of the work that's happening on advisory, and to promise, though this meeting will primarily focus on safety, we will come back to these priorities in greater depth soon.
Hi, everybody. I am here to talk about priority one, strengthen our advisory program to reinforce the tenet, every child is a blessing. And I wanted to report a few kind of structural aspects and then some programmatic aspects. And I'm sure I will return at a later time to talk about all the excitement around advisory. So over the summer, we determined a couple of key guidelines for all of the schools that they had to follow in order to create a program that said to students, we care about you. And we don't only care about how you're doing in content classes. We care about building community with you. We care about your socio-emotional state. And we are going to create a situation where you can really come back and come back feeling loved and blessed. The focus of longer advisory, so we have two periods where it's actually longer, 40 minutes or more. That was a requirement in order to do some of that deeper community building, relationship building, and socio-emotional learning. And we required that at least once a month, professional development for teachers was dedicated to advisory. And that's all happened. And there's been more than that. As you can see, these are the various schools' advisory times. And I will tell you that these are in some cases doubled or tripled or quadrupled from what we had before. So it's been a major, major shift for everybody. Next slide, please. So concomitant with that, we had to really figure out what kind of support will teachers need. Because for teachers, especially, you know, teachers, they do not want to get in there and not have something to do. It's a long period to just stand there. And so some teachers really felt like, what am I going to do? What is this? And so in order to support that, we made sure that each site had an advisory lead, and those leads meet org-wide weekly to discuss the program, and they work with the grade level teams at their sites to create lessons. And people are like trying to march in concert so that the same things are happening from classroom to classroom within a grade level. We are about to administer a survey, and I'm sure we'll report the data to you. We're going to do it three times this year to see how students feel about advisory and community and relationship building. And I have been also providing a lot of resources for people to pull from. You can see that under resource share if you have this. Oh, hold on. Can you go back one? So what I want to say on that bottom bullet is that having a lot of activities and having a lot of lessons is not the same as having a program. And so my goal really in all this is that by next year, we can say we have an advisory program, not just kind of a collection of things people are doing for now. We're just trying to support people because they're in front of the kids and we want them to feel comfortable. Okay, next slide. Almost done. I'm not going to read this out loud, but Gardena had a wonderful advisory activity where students were asked to really think through what does it feel like when you feel like a blessing? And what what do I need to do to contribute to an atmosphere where everyone feels like a blessing, et cetera? And you can read this kind of at your leisure, but the students are really thinking hard about this and about their contribution. And final slide. Just a couple of activities over in Gardena during advisory or, you know, other places where kids are feeling like a blessing. It's been very active. It's been very successful. The majority of teachers are really enjoying the whole advisory thrust. So far, so good. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Beth. So with that, I just wanted to open up to any questions the board members have or anything you want to ask about, and then we'll go to the principal presentations. We have two this time, so we're going to have two each time to reduce the amount of presentations that are happening. But any questions you have?
Just want to take a time check here. Are we trying to keep to this original schedule?
We're going to shorten slightly the other stuff, Ken, but I'll do my best to bring it back into the schedule.
All right, good.
Thank you. Okay, so with that, Casey, are you ready to share screen? Thank you.
Oh yeah, JD, do you have the slides or do you want me to share my screen?
I can share screen.
Oh, cool, thanks for asking.
No problem.
Hi everyone. It's so good to see everyone's faces. We'll just wait till the slides go up. Just to give a little context, there's not much on my slides. I feel like we've all been looking at screens for 2 years, and we've been looking at a lot of like statistics and data, numbers and graphs, and kind of like what Farnaz was saying, like we've like sort of earned a minor in like public health and safety. So I deviated from that a little bit and I just simplified my slides to include sort of what campus looks like right now, because this is something that like I hope you can understand even just a tiny percentage of joy, like in the way that I've been experiencing it every day at our school sites. You can go to the next slide, Farnaz. So our students are back. We have all of our students, pretty much all of our students who have returned. We're at about 517 students. There were a few students who moved or who transferred. But these are some pictures of our kids back at school. And as you can see, like they have masks on, but otherwise like it feels like ECHS. Everyone's super happy. And these are our ninth grade babies. And the last time they were on a school campus was when they were in seventh grade, basically. And so it's so fun to have them be on campus, and they're like so playful and like there's so much laughing, and they're like actually really brave compared to other ninth grade classes. And I think that like developmentally, or I used to be a middle school teacher, and like I loved teaching seventh and eighth graders because like the seventh graders are starting to build that confidence to know that like they're about to be like running the school. But since that got taken away from them, I feel like it sort of paused time, and now they still have that attitude, but in high school, and it's a really cool way to start off their high school career. And it gives them this like level of courage and bravery and like enthusiasm that I haven't seen in a really long time in a freshman class. And so they're like bringing an energy to our campus that's really different and super exciting. Next slide, please. And this is Alfonso just playing the guitar on the little deck that the students built by the stream. And I just felt like this totally captured like ECHS and who we are and like who our kids are. Like the fact that he feels comfortable enough to just like go sit by the stream and play the guitar. He's probably supposed to be in class, but like it's okay. So everyone's just like super happy to be together, and the kids are so overjoyed to see each other. And I feel like the camaraderie and like the way that they've been interacting with each other and with us is, I don't know, it just feels really different in like the best of ways. Like I can't tell you how many kids have come up to me and been like, are you our principal? And I'm like, yes, I am. No one really ever cared before. Like it's just really neat that they're like excited to interact with people in a way that I've never seen before. And then the last slide, please. And then these are our students during lunchtime, just gathering, and like they've been so good about safety measures and keeping their masks on. And the only time they take them off is when they're eating. And we've had so many safety conversations with them that they're like, okay, we totally get it. But it hasn't been an issue, and everybody's just been so excited to be together in space again. So this is a really short presentation, and I know that there's not a whole lot of data on here, but I felt like this was a qualitative data snapshot that would hopefully bring you a little bit of joy and remind you in the ways that it's reminded me of why I do this work and why I want to stay part of this community. And thank you all for sticking it through with us, because this has been a really trying time, and I don't think it's going to stop being trying. But like I keep telling staff, like this isn't going to be an easy year, but it's going to be a really good year. And it's definitely proven to be that so far. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Casey. And with that, Dr. Guardado, do you want me to share or do you want to share?
Share.
Excellent. Thank you.
And I'll just continue with the same feeling that Casey started us with. It is such an amazing thing to be at the site right now. The kids are happy to be there. We started with 115 students, and we are now at 114. And if it wasn't because of students have, because they have had to be placed in quarantine, we would be at like 99% attendance on a daily basis. Our students are showing up. They're showing up because they want to be in school. They're showing up because they care. They're showing up because they're excited to be a part of what we're doing as a school. We have a couple of glows. We have a really positive student culture at ECHS Gardena. Like I said, our average attendance is about 95.5%, but that's including the students that have had to be quarantined. We have a very consistent support system for advisory. If you ever have a chance, you'll see everybody in advisory doing the same thing. Today we had our first pep rally, and it is the best pep rally I've ever been a part of. The teachers planned it and the students were so happy, and I'll show some pictures. We have also begun student-centered coaching, and we have had some really good parent feedback this past 5 weeks. And these are just some of the pictures. I know that a lot of you have not had the chance to be at ECHS Gardena. This is what our classrooms look like. And you can already see evidence of learning. You can already see evidence of students just being present. Teachers are at the front of the classroom. They're doing their best to move past crisis response and begin instruction and really begin to get students to be in that mindset of we are a college prep high school and we need to start doing the work now so that we are ready 4 years down the line. These are images of our pep rally. We successfully fit 114 students in our sanctuary, but I am afraid to say that that space is not going to be enough next year. It was already a full house. Students in advisory created flags for their advisory, and they chose a theme song that they walked into the sanctuary space, and they had celebrations. And if you see over here, we played games with them too, and they were also responsive during the games, that it's really a sense of pride for me to have started this from scratch and to see everyone just gathered in a space. It was a really good day because of that. We do, however, have some identified areas of growth already, really supporting our tier, one of our priorities, MTSS tier one, ensuring that there are consistent checks for understanding and student interactions. We also want to make sure that we improve our use of instructional time, opportunities for intervention, both inside of the classroom and outside of the classroom, maximizing after school programs. And this just comes from observations and then just really looking at our NWEA data, realizing that we have some work to do in math. Like Casey said, our students were seventh graders the last time that they were in a school setting. And so it's not just having them be a part of a school, but really looking at what we need to do now so that we can decrease this percentage right here. And we are, I'm sorry, where's my ELA? We're at 52% below grade level mastery. So it is time for us to get to work, and I am really looking forward to reporting some major improvements next time I present.
Thank you so much, Dr. Guardado and Casey. I just want to open up for any questions from the board members about their presentations. If you could stop sharing, that would be great. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any questions?
Okay. Just a comment. That's just amazing. I mean, how happy it makes us all to see the kids back in school. And then I look at them with their masks on, and they don't even seem to notice that they're wearing masks. Everybody's just kind of like back to their groove. So congratulations.
Thank you both so much for being willing to present in the midst of all this chaos. It's beautiful to see the pictures of kids. Thank you so much. So with that, the next agenda item is a presentation from Dorothy. Dorothy, would you like to share your screen, or do you need me to share the presentation?
I'll share. Do I still have 7 minutes or less?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I So since there are a lot of slides, I was going to just focus on the current year because we're asking you to approve a new budget today. So right now, are there questions about 2021? Everything looked good from last year. And then the audit actually starts on Monday. So moving to this year, overall, it was good. You know, we got the 5% we thought. And in general, all the schools are getting more money. But what was a little bit tricky with the budget and the trailer bills that have been approved is that there are a lot of new buckets of money that the school has to plan for, and we'll look at all the different buckets. One of them is this expanded learning, which has the same name as the other grant from the spring. So the two middle schools will actually have some additional money for their after school and before school programs. So that is good news. This hasn't officially been rolled out by the CDE, but that info is forthcoming. These two other grants, the educator effectiveness, it's like the grant from 2015 where the schools will get money for professional development. And all the schools except, I don't think the new high school will get it. And only Lawndale will get this A through G completion, and they'll have a minimum award of $150,000. You will see that there are some updates coming. There's that ESSER 3 supplement that I think is at the next board meeting that it'll also talk about how the schools are spending their additional concentration grant money. And then there's an annual update and due by the end of February that you also see at a board meeting. What was nice about this new state budget was that all the deferrals kept decreasing in each iteration. Last year, we had $13 billion in funds deferred. And then in each version, it kept decreasing. And then there are no deferrals for this fiscal year. And then on top of that, all the deferrals from last year actually got paid back early. So everything got paid back early because we were supposed to wait until September, October, and November for some of the money. Another piece of good news was the school's unemployment expense. It was supposed to jump by 23 times, but it ended up, you know, not being as much, but it still is an increase. And then there are some additional other buckets of money, like child nutrition, the rate went up, the after school program for the middle schools have also increased. So here is a look at all of the plans that you will see as a board, except the first one, which is the SELPA plan. But some things to note is that a couple of these, like the educator effectiveness and the A through G, they will require two separate board meetings where you have a public hearing at one and then you approve it at a different meeting. And then here is just a look at all the different spending deadlines for all these different buckets of funding, which makes everything a bit more complicated for everyone in your accounting and finance department. What is nice is that there is some BRONAC flexibility that was approved. So what it kind of means is that all the virtual meetings you have been enjoying, you can continue that as long as there is a proclaimed, as the board approves that there's a proclaimed state of emergency because of social distancing needs or health and safety risks. There are some specific rules with the public access in case like the Zoom doesn't work, the meeting has to stop or no further action can be taken. But that is, I'm sure will be covered when I think at the next board meeting. But if the decision is not to use that flexibility and you do want to meet virtually, all of the old rules apply where the address has to be listed, you know, wherever you are, it's open to the public. And then you also have to be within the boundaries of the authorizer, or a quorum has to be. Any questions before I move to financials? Okay. So all the schools have an improved outlook, mainly because in July, the PPP loan from last year got forgiven. So that is, you'll see this big green bar at all the schools, and then increased expenses to offset, you know, this imbalance. So at Lawndale, they'll be spending more on instructional materials. They also decided to move this decrease in revenue, some the federal money, to a following fiscal year. So it wasn't like they lost money, they're just not gonna use it later. And then this amount in services and other operating, most of it is in instructional consultants, like for special ed, ELD, you know, coaching. And you'll see this increase at each of the schools. And then each of the schools as well are putting their donations to zero to focus on, I think, all the money going to the newest school. But in any case, Lawndale is increasing their forecast by over 300,000. Gardena, it's very similar. You know, they have their PPP forgiveness. The big buckets are, you know, this decrease in state revenue is mainly from the SB 740 because we adjusted down how much the school was going to spend in rent. There are increased compensation and benefits. You know, there's a mix of, you know, higher sub expense, and then we're also spending more in classified in areas of clerical and security. You know, you're adding this health and safety coordinator, and existing employees also got more hours. You can also see their donations are going down to zero. And then this federal revenue is also moving money to another fiscal year. For Inglewood, it's a very similar story. I'm trying to see if there's anything different. I guess the one thing that is different for them is they had savings and depreciation because the board approved the new lease in July. So the expenses got spread out over a longer period of time. So that expense decreased. For the high school in Gardena, this increase in federal revenue is just the offset. If you looked at an earlier slide, because the federal money moved from last year to this year. We actually are increasing their fundraising donations by 100,000. The savings in services and others, that rent is a little bit lower, but we did add in more expenses for the instructional consultants. This books and supplies increase, we need more for classroom furniture and equipment. And then their compensation and benefits. We added an instructional coach, health and safety coordinator, as well as an office clerk. And then the LCFF decreased because the enrollment compared to budget, we decreased it by 15 enrollment. So ADA fell by a little over 14. But otherwise, just looking at the operating income, it's pretty much the same as what you approved in June. For cash, it looks positive. I mean, we definitely have to monitor the newest high school, but what is nice is that we've had a couple years of runway and have been able to build up a nice balance. Are there any questions?
I have a question, Dorothy. Actually, it's just a concern. I'm just wondering how far out you run these projections. I'm just concerned we're getting all these one-time, you know, airplanes flying over and dropping money on us. And eventually when that stops, you know, we've increased our expenses, and how sustainable is that going to be?
I can jump in for this one, Dorothy. So we've done a five-year forecast based on the funding that we're receiving. A lot of this funding will age out in the next 5 years, Ken. And yeah. Some of the additions that we're making, a majority of the additions that we're making are new roles that could potentially be taken away at that time. But I didn't want to not make these expenditures now to meet the needs of our students now, given the amount of support that's critical at this time, because we're forecasting that in the long term, we might have to cut these positions. So what we're doing is a cross-section between increases in positions, sort of like the social worker team. We may have to reduce it significantly. We might not be able to have a social worker team, but our hope is to have the infrastructure in place and supports in place and to be able to build capacity amongst our existing team. And then there's also a lot of consulting increases that have gone into this. So we're partnering, hopefully next board meeting, you'll see that we'll have a contract with a tutoring partner that's an external partner similar to Woodcraft Rangers that could deliver the tutoring support. So we're trying to come up with a sustainable model, recognizing that we have to be okay with the fact that we are hiring really quickly now to meet the needs of our students. And in 3 to 5 years, it may be a little painful, but we need to do this now for our students.
Okay, good answer. So you've thought about it. That's
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been in other places in other districts where they, because 5 years from now, it would cause a lot of trouble and we would have to, that they didn't act as quickly as we are now. And the reality is we need to meet the needs of our students now. And you saw the scores in ECHS Gardena, they're coming after a year and a half, 2 years of not being in school. Our students need as much support as we can provide now. We need health and safety supports. We need to be able to get through this as a team and not overburden and stress. And, you know, to some extent, this has been the hardest year I've seen these leaders manage through. And so we needed to add the supports as much as possible now so that we can get through this. This is a marathon and we all need to be here at the end.
Yeah, good.
Any other questions? I will be surprised if we spend all of this money. We're trying our best. Hiring is harder than we want it to be. LAUSD had some 6,000 positions to hire. And so it's challenging to find the right people for the roles, but we're doing the best we can. And we're being strategic and innovative and trying to find more supports as we can. And truthfully, after years of always telling people, well, you need to be cautious of your budget. It's so weird to tell them now, please spend as much as you can to meet the needs of the kids. I can't tell you how many times. There are certain of our principals who struggle with it more. I'm smiling at you. But the reality is that we're in a blessed position, in a challenging position, but blessed financially to be able to try to address this challenging moment. Okay.
Hey. Move on to study session.
Thank you, Dorothy. I'm going to share my screen again. I just have to pull this up and jump into the study session. Sorry, one second. Okay. So I wanted to be clear at this board meeting, we are not considering like making a decision about asking you to make a decision about whether or not we should implement any mandates either for our employees or for our students. We want to hold out for some important shifts that we're expecting to come. First of all, we want to wait for formal FDA authorization of Pfizer for 12 to 16 year olds. We're also waiting to see if we can continue to encourage vaccination by choice through clinics and other supports. And we really wanted to use this space to hear from you guys. And in addition, like there is some possibility of external mandates coming. It seems very small at this time. And if an external mandate comes, it would reduce the onus on us as a small charter provider to do this. So this is a list of some of the mandates that are already in place. You can see LAUSD's got a mandate that everyone should be aware of. LACO has implemented one for their staff and contractors, but not for LACO school staff or students or authorized schools. LAUSD, if you have a Prop 39 facility and you're in a charter school that's on a Prop 39 facility, that mandate stands for those schools as well. Culver City has one, and Contra Costa Unified does, and last night Oakland approved one. And then we're also surrounded by public school districts that have pretty phenomenal vaccination rates without even considering. But that is not the situation that we're in. Amongst our staff, we have really high vaccination rates at all of our schools, but you know, one or two of our schools are slightly lower than the other ones, and it's an issue of concern. When you look at the staff, you can see that 50% of the unvaccinated staff are African American, close to 50% are Hispanic. And then the breakdown is 6% certificated teachers or counselors and 10 who are classified. And that's important because when you're thinking about if vaccination status might cause someone to leave, would they be in a really hard to hire role? Those 6 certificated staff members are in really hard to hire roles. We wanted to proactively talk to everyone to hear what their concerns are. Is there anything we as an organization can do to support them to consider vaccinating? And these are the responses that we got. You can see that talked to all but 2 or 3 of the staff. Well, tried to call all of them. Got left voicemails. Some people said, thank you for caring, I'll get back to you. Others said, I'm going to get vaccinated. One person said they'd get vaccinated that weekend. Others said they're thinking about it and getting ready. 4 people, which is a larger number, said that they will get vaccinated if there's a mandate. They don't want to leave their job, but they will only do it if there's a mandate. And one person said, if we have to vaccinate, I will leave. So this was interesting detail for me, because prior to this, I thought, I don't want to lose all of these staff members. There's no way that I would consider this. But this made me think, well, if God forbid, like we had to move forward with a mandate from, if we had to do it, there's some movement, there's some possibility here. We don't know what percentages of our students are vaccinated yet. We've been requesting vaccine data optionally for people to share with us right now, and we're collecting that information, but this is the information from our local communities that we've tracked. What I think is really important to look at here is the rate of increase. So when you look at Lawndale, it went from 34% in July to 61 or 62% in August, on August 29th for the 12 to 17 group. So there is a lot of movement happening, slower than other communities, but still it's growing. Right now, we are offering independent study, as you guys can remember, because we approved the independent study policy in our last board meeting. So we're offering it both for students who are on quarantine, which is short-term independent study, and then longer-term independent study for students who either have health concerns or are really anxious about returning. But we're doing our best to try to dissuade students who are doing it because of anxiety and trying to provide the supports and show the data. Look, zero transmissions among students, 2 among staff. Like, we're trying to emphasize that this is safe for them to return. But the numbers are really small, thank goodness. As of right now, there's about 9 students who are strongly considering longer-term independent study. That's smaller than the percentage of other districts and charters I've been speaking to who have a larger portion of their student population. I don't know what it's like at Lawndale, Gretchen, but in some places I've heard of much higher rates. But what's really interesting and to look at is that of the students who've chosen, who are currently expressing an interest in independent study, long-term independent study, 7 of the 9 are African-American. And it says, well, only 15%, it's closer to 10% of our student population overall are African-American. 2 of them have serious health concerns. Majority of the rest of them have some health concerns or are feeling very anxious. So these are some of the benefits we perceived. I'm curious to hear what else comes out through the conversation. It looks like a majority of our staff will vaccinate if there is a mandate. If there's exposure, fewer of our staff and students will need to go out. It reduces the risk associated with, like, every time somebody goes out, somebody who is unvaccinated comes into close contact with someone who is positive. For students, we can now do a modified quarantine and keep those students on campus and just keep testing. But for adults, if an adult who's unvaccinated is exposed to someone who tests positive, we need to get a substitute. We need to manage quarantine. If they leave the state, they have to take an extended quarantine. So it's challenging to manage. LAUSD has already done the mandate, so we don't have as much of a risk of students leaving to go to LAUSD. And we wouldn't be an outlier at this time if we chose to do it for employees. As a charter school, we would be an outlier if we chose to do it for students. Risks that we see is if our families don't feel comfortable with it and they either want more independent study or they want to go to a remote option, long-term remote option. There is some legal risk. We talked to our attorneys today at Young, Mini, and Core, and they said that LAUSD, because they're the Goliath, are unlikely to experience much legal risk, but smaller charters who choose to go in this direction might. It's pretty low risk, but there is some. And then operationally, we would have to manage medical exemptions. We wouldn't be able to give remote option of work to some employees and not others. So we would have to say no remote option for anyone. Right now, we are trying to accommodate some staff members. That would have to go away if we had a mandate. And then also administration of it would be challenging. So I'm going to share this presentation with you, and I'm also going to share this graphic organizer with you all. And the next step for you all is to take 5 minutes to think through it on your own independently, to fill in the graphic organizer with either questions or thoughts that you have about the data that you're seeing, the information you're seeing, and what it makes you think about what our next steps should be or things that you think we should consider. Then we're going to put you in small groups of 3 to 5 people where you'll have a chance to talk for 7 minutes, and then we'll have room for a larger group discussion. Are there any questions before we open up? We'll pause for people to think. I just want to celebrate one little thing, and I see Danielle here. Today, we were interviewed by the Accelerator Network about our experience with Accelerator and implementing a singular priority with Reading Apprenticeship. And she talked about how every single class she sees has Reading Apprenticeship used in it, and most of our board meetings use the Reading Apprenticeship framework. And I just want to point out that this is the Reading Apprenticeship framework that we utilize at all of these board meetings. The think on your own, pair share, discuss in a group, then have an opportunity to share back. These are ways in which we do what we're doing in class with the board. So I just wanted to share that with you. So if there's no questions, I'm going to share this graphic organizer with everyone. So please, if you want to turn off your camera, if you want to do whatever you want to do in order to take 5 minutes to think, sorry. Should work now, I apologize. Seen the
refresh.
Yeah, just refresh. Thank you.
Farnaz, would you be willing to copy and paste the question prompts into the chat box?
Yes, thank you. Truthfully, the question prompts are really, there aren't really question prompts. It's 5 minutes to think through. I wanted to not prompt with specific questions. I wanted you guys to think about what questions come to mind. What challenges are you seeing? What do you want us to be thinking about? So I can put some of those questions there, but. Thanks. Okay, since I see the typing slowing down a bit, I'm gonna go ahead and put you all into breakout rooms for 5 minutes for discussion with other people. And then we'll come back together for whole group discussion after that. So I'm gonna, hopefully you'll have new people. Hey, Zena, are you able to? Oh, okay.
How are you?
Hi, Beth. I wanted to hear that question. So I want to open everyone up to sharing both what you've shared, sharing what you're struggling with in this whole session. Let's really open up for discussion. I just want to remind you that I would love for this to be as robust and critical a conversation as possible. That's what we're hoping you as our board members can push us to be better. Please don't hesitate to push us on this.
So,
yes.
So one of the, I'd like to open up just by saying, expressing my admiration for Dr. Matthews. First of all, the way she described all the safety measures she has on campus is like state of the art. So open, you know, HEPA filters, CO2 monitors, open doors, ventilation, masking, distancing, everything. I mean, eating outside. The building is layout. I mean, everything, you're doing everything perfectly. And then the randomized testing to reduce the impact on the class, the fact that she pioneered that for ECS, that's amazing. So this is a leader that's doing everything right. And one of the things that she brought up is, you know, but also when you look at the breakdown in terms of the staff that doesn't want to get vaccinated, you know, it falls into African-American and Hispanics. And like, what do you do or how do you approach it? And one of the things I commend her and I would definitely advise is to respect the decision of the people who choose not to. Because one of the things that I'm being very humbled, you know, I try to be careful not to be arrogant when I approach my staff, is when they tell me, look, I'm a young person who's looking to be a mother one day, and I have all these issues with it. Or I'm an African-American male who's got, you know, I've been educated as to there's a lot of good reasons why people may choose not to. So I think respecting that and not trying to come across as trying to bully them with the data. So Dr. Matthews definitely was expressing that, and I commend that approach. Did you want to add anything, Dr. Matthews, to that, or?
Sorry, the whole family came to join the board meeting. That we are acknowledged. I'll come back.
I know there was a whole room that had a completely contradictory opinion to this. So I want to ask you to step up and tell us why you disagree. Let's have a robust conversation here.
I'll jump in. I'm not sure if you're talking about the room I was in or not, but
there's two actually.
Okay. Well, I mean, I totally appreciate what Kennedy is saying, and I agree with it. But at the same time, I don't think that we should allow that, you know, individuals' reluctance and hesitation to jeopardize the health and safety of the entire community, which to me is, you know, at the top of the pyramid. So we can be compassionate, but I don't think, you know, I think that people who are not vaccinated shouldn't be on campus.
I do just have an opportunity to just quickly jump in. I definitely can respect all viewpoints. I just do understand that, especially amongst the Black and the African American community, the hesitancy historically behind all of this, and how do we handle that with a level of care and understanding? And I think a part of that is having the individual conversations with individuals versus a mandate, because then you start making it more of less seeing them as humans and more of just let's just get it done. Because in my experience of having more of these one-on-one conversations, it's not that people haven't thought about it, it's just that they may not have had the conversation with someone who is willing or has been vaccinated when the people who they're around are highly unvaccinated. And so I think just it is going to handle with a sense of care, especially if it is impacting our African-American staff. And we know how difficult it is for us to find African-American teachers. So all of that to me is what I also wanted to take into consideration. I'm not against it, but it's something to consider.
Yeah, I think that for me touches on something that I've been struggling with, because it, to me, it's not just about staffing African-American teachers Black teachers and staff, but like, Ken, you talked about like jeopardizing the health and wellness of our community. Like we know from research, like the incredible and outsized value of Black teachers for students of color. We know that it has a lasting impact for them, like they're into their career and into their future, just because they had one Black teacher. We also know how few Black teachers we employ at ECS, like on the whole, although we've done a great job over the last several years increasing that rate. So I think it's like, yes, we're jeopardizing health, but there's something on the other side, like in terms of our mission to serve the kids that we work with, the communities that they come from.
Yeah.
And yeah, so there's like, that's why that's just been weighing on me. Yeah.
You guys, I mean, I'll echo what Kennedy said. I mean, you are more thoughtful about the issues that we've been dealing with in the last 24 months or however long it's been than any other organization that I'm aware of. So, you know, we can come in and, you know, give you 5 minutes worth of input, but that's just input. And I totally respect where you guys are.
Well, I deeply appreciate your respect. I want to push you to push us because this is something that we're struggling with, because at the same time, Danielle feels this way and she's expressed this challenge. We've also talked about the flip side of, well, God forbid if there's another surge or another variant and some of the schools that are highly vaccinated will be prepared for it and we won't be. And then also what happens if we do put a mandate in place and a huge proportion of our students want independent study, which we know isn't good for them. We know is not good for them. So it's like all of these things are still possibilities. And I think we're doing okay for this moment and I'm very grateful for it, but I don't want to be caught by surprise in 3 months. And I want us to have thought about this with you and for you to push us. So feel free to keep pushing us. Any ideas to incentivize? We've tried raffles, calls, lots of love, lots of pushy emails and texts from us. I can't tell you how many pushy emails and texts, more than 100. but any ideas also welcome.
Well, what about peers that, you know, who are vaccinated?
Tell us more. What do you
envision? Well, I mean, I don't know. Are there any Black teachers or staff that are vaccinated?
A lot.
Okay. So using them as allies and as, you know, listeners and, you know, sharing their experience. Maybe you're doing that already. Just as reassurance.
Beth, did I see you on mute? Can you share?
You know, I go back and forth about all this. I guess if our case rates were higher, we would have more grounds with the urgency, like our own school's case rates, but they're not because we're doing everything right. It's kind of a funny thing. It's like, oh, we did so well that there's not a good, no good grounds for the vaccine. I mean, one option is we strongly encourage and we wait for kind of the political world to push a mandate. I mean, our seventh graders can't come to school without Tdap. That's a real thing. And so conceivably there might come a time when we all have to do it, you know? And so there's like strong encouragement and yes, you can't go on these outdoor ed trips, but I mean, I'd hate to ostracize somebody for it, you know, like kids that would, you know, like you wear some red mask if you haven't done it, you know, it'd be horrible. So,
yeah.
Well, I just wanted to mention, like, you had said that four of the staff members said that they would get vaccinated if there was a mandate. So I think they're on the cusp. They're like, I think it's my choice, but if I lose my job, okay, I'll do it. So is it a financial thing? Is it a, like, what is it? I'm not clear. So
I think it's a frustration or a distrust in the system is a very big part of the conversation that we've had with many of them. And also wanting to wait longer to see longer term effects and recognizing that as they are younger, they are not a high risk individual. Mm-hmm. So why should they expose themselves to something they don't know the long term risks of? Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering if we've heard from parents or from the other side saying, you know, I'm feeling really concerned because we are putting their feelings or thoughts about their choice ahead of the health and safety of my children. Have we come across that?
That's not something that we have gotten too much feedback about, because I think that our parents are in communities where there's some reluctance to vaccination. But on top of that, we report 90-some percent of mm-hmm. our overall staff are vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So that's not what they're going to focus on. Mm-hmm. 93% of the whole organization is pretty mm-hmm. significant.
But I mean, are we looking kind of long-term? Like all we need is one outbreak and then this will all fall apart, right? Because then everybody's like, why wasn't it 100% vaccination? Why didn't you mandate? Why didn't, like, are we, yeah. you know, it just needs one outbreak, right? Mm-hmm. Or something terrible happening.
God forbid, yeah.
Yeah.
But with that said, you have to look also at, you know, the risk. And I think one thing that I want to continue to applaud the Farnaz and the leadership is the protocols that you have in place. You know, is the transmission rate that you currently have. I mean, vaccination or no vaccination, we have heard of transmission occurring. And I do believe strongly in respecting that individual choice.
I think there are two inflection points, one that recently passed and one that's in the future. The one that recently passed was prior to the recall election, in which folks like LAUSD made a shift in the event that a Republican came into office that would be, that would put in anti-mandate mandates. And some districts made a decision to do something so that a Republican governor would have to undo it. Now, in the moment we find ourselves now, LADPH is even lowering the quarantine requirements for masked individuals, because what the data is showing within this petri dish of students is that masking in classrooms works. School-based transmissions when masks are being worn are not occurring at any significant level. And so the rationale and justification to do a mandate at this point in time is getting weaker and weaker. I think the inflection point in the future is going to be when we want to return to school without masks. And that's going to be a different decision. Do you want your child, or do you want to work with a colleague that you're not sure is vaccinated when they have their mask off?
Thank you, Dave. I'm conscious of the fact that we're over time, but I did very much want to open up this space and begin this conversation. It's definitely a beginning. Hopefully it doesn't have to continue, but if it does, we will bring it back to you, of course. And if you have ideas, thoughts, incentive structures, ways in which we can continue to support this, we welcome them. And I think with that, we can, if you're okay with it, Ken, we can close the study session for today and move on to the consent items and hopefully end only 15 minutes late if all goes well.
All right. So next on the agenda is to approve all of the consent items A through L. We've approved the agenda. And unless there's, So I'll just read them and then you can let me know if there are any that you want to further discuss. There's approving minutes from board meetings of a couple of dates, finance committee minutes, private donations. There's a schedule error of private donations over $1,000 on unaudited actuals, which were reviewed by the finance committee and recommended for approval. And then a few contracts for the Woodcraft Rangers and for outdoor education. And then we've got a committee calendar and so forth, board committees, terms, parent student handbook, sale or disposition of technology equipment, accepting the resignation of Dr. Huey Barnes from the board effective on the 10th of September. And finally, a revised independent study policy that was presented. So those are action or consent items A through L. Can I get a, first of all, a motion and a second to approve those?
Janina, I motion to approve consent items.
Kennedy,
is that? Nope.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead, Denise.
I heard Kennedy, so we'll take that. Are there any, is there any discussion, questions or discussions about the consent items? Okay, if not, then we'll take a vote. So Kennedy.
Aye.
Denise.
Aye.
Janina.
Aye.
Zena.
Aye.
Gretchen.
Aye.
And Ken, aye. Okay. That passes.
And I just want to do a very quick comment because I got two texts expressing significant sadness about Dr. Barnes' departure.
Yeah.
We're going to celebrate her service on our board soon, but I did want to just acknowledge that she's taken a very significant leadership role with her church. That's a more than a full-time job.
Yeah.
Very passionate about it. It's a service of her heart and her purpose in this world. And so she was really sad to go. She expressed lots of love for everyone, but she has to do this now. And who knows, maybe she'll come back. So that's, I just wanted to acknowledge that because I'm sure other people were feeling it. We talked about it at the last board meeting, but some people missed it. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, then that brings us to the action items and we'll take them one at a time. Action item A, which is to approve the budgets for 21-22 for all four of the schools as recommended by the Finance Committee. Let's get a motion and a second on that.
I motion to approve.
Denise.
Zena, I second.
And Zena. Okay, any discussion? All right, then we'll vote. Kennedy?
Aye.
Denise?
Aye.
Janina?
Aye.
Zena?
Aye.
Gretchen?
Aye.
Ken? Aye. Okay. So I guess that's the only action item. Then the rest of these are just some informational announcements of dates for board meeting. Next one, October 28th. Looks like there's an in-person option this time. That's exciting. And some committee meetings. So how about that? We're at the closing. So let's take some time for some appreciations.
I really appreciate everyone on the staff at Environmental Charter School for handling these absolutely completely complex, no quick answer type situations.
Yeah.
I'd like to underscore that and just, again, a shout out to the leadership, to the staff, because these are some of the most gut-wrenching emotional times that you guys are exercising this leadership in. And it's not, it's taking all of you, I'm sure 100% of your body and energy. So very much appreciate it.
I'd just like to celebrate the fact that we opened a high school in the midst of all of this. Yeah.
I try not to do specific individual appreciations frequently, but I do want to do a single appreciation for Sarah Jamison, because in these recent months, she has gone above and beyond to serve as our health and safety support, who's gone and tested every student, every staff member, supported the principals whenever there's been a positive test, made funny faces with the kids as she's conducting the tests, been joyous and funny, and then also led the best HR team I think ECS has ever had to recruit and support and encourage and engage a more diverse team than we've ever had, while also meeting LACO's requirements. So Sarah, you've gone above and beyond. I'm so grateful that Jen is here to take a lot off your plate, but I just want to publicly acknowledge that you've held a crazy amount and I appreciate you.
Here, here. All right. Well, let's bring it home with a motion and second to adjourn the meeting. Don't be shy.
I motion to adjourn the meeting.
Zena, I second.
All right. So all in favor, Kennedy.
Aye.
Denise.
Aye.
Janina.
Aye.
Zena.
Aye.
Gretchen.
Aye.
Ken, aye. Great meeting. Really great, thoughtful discussion. Thanks, everyone. Meeting.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.